Hi, I'm Jay Harrison G.
Hi, I'm Nick Rashad Burrows.
Hi, I'm Kevin Smith Kirkwood.
Hi, I'm James Roberts IV, and you are listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And I don't know about y'all, but it could be the dead of winter, like, say now, for instance, and I'll still be wanting a glass of rosé. I know it's a summer drink or whatever, but sometimes you just need that crisp, sweet, uplifting taste. Am I right? Now, if you love rosé but haven't been to the Rosé Mansion, you do not know what you're missing. It's an immersive pop-up experience where you get to taste all different types of rosé and take Instagram-worthy photos. So basically, my dream spot. It's the ultimate millennial vibe and is featured on Gold Star. So what are you waiting for? But as you know, that is just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know, every week I'm like, oh, I'm so hyped, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited, and then I comment on it, and then I comment on how I comment on it, and it's like, I'm just going to accept it, that I'm an excitable person, and that there's a lot of great artists out there to talk to. Today is a special day, though, because I am thrilled to introduce this guest, because our meeting was happenstance. We met outside of Broadway Dance Center, and James Roberts IV was like, hey, you do Call and Response, I listen to that. And I was like, yo, that meant a lot to me. But he is a performer. He is a content creator. We're going to get into the nitty gritty with him today. So please, everyone, as you're listening, say hello to James Roberts IV.
Yay.
Hi.
Hello.
I know the intros are always so extra, but they're fun that way.
Absolutely.
You know?
I'm cool with extra.
But so you listen to the podcast.
I do.
You don't know how much that means to me. Oh. I just like, because it started out as a passion project and everyone's like, how many subscribers do you have? How many downloads? I'm like, no. It's about the conversations, you know?
Yes.
So that means a lot. But I'm so happy that we're getting to chat today.
Yeah.
And learn all about your journey.
Okay.
When I was doing my research, I learned that you grew up in Tennessee.
Yes, I did.
How was that? But of course, like, how did you get into performing arts as a part of that?
I mean, Tennessee was interesting.
Uh-huh.
It's a place that I like visiting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll ever live there again.
Yeah.
So there's that. but, you know, I mean, like, I got into performing arts there.
Right.
So, I mean, that was something that was good from it. I started, I've been singing since I was about 4 or 5.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. I remember, like, my earliest singing experiences being in, like a preschool chorus situation. We had this one teacher, her name was Miss Della, I still remember her.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of plucked me from the group and had me sing a solo in like front of like lots of people, and I was terrified, but she was like there with me and I remember singing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been singing since then. I was in the Chattanooga Boys Choir when I was young as well. We toured all over the place, England, Hawaii, Canada,
wow.
Lots of places. That was for 7 years. And theater came much later.
Did it?
Yeah.
And I'm curious too, because I feel like even the way we were just saying it, like there's so much subtext of like the South. And the uh-huh. South has got a lot of mm-hmm. issues, for, you know, yeah. which we can also delve into. But mm-hmm. I feel like the South gets a rap of like not supporting the arts. However,
yes.
I think the communities might be smaller, but they're like still passionate.
Yes.
You know,
I think I can say that because like where I was, and especially at the time I was there growing up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, there was, like I said, I was in the Chattanooga Boys Choir.
Right.
There was a girls choir. There were there was a performing arts school. I did not go there, but it was there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There were like junior symphony orchestras that like my sister was in, and like both of my sisters danced. It's
okay.
Like, you know, there were things.
It was small but passionate.
Yeah.
Small but mighty. Yeah. I mean, and 'cause my mom grew up in Texas and she would always be like, they had 2 football stadiums or 2 basketball courts or whatever, and like we didn't have a stage. Like they had to perform in the cafeteria or whatever it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess as you were starting to delve into the arts community in Chattanooga, like, who are some of your early mentors? You said you had your teacher pluck you out. Like, yes. How was all of that?
That was amazing. She was amazing. I remember loving everything about her.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, her kind of plucking me out to sing. And from there, that was literally preschool.
So, but it's interesting that you remember it, that had such an impact on you, you know?
Literally preschool. From there, in elementary school, there was just regular music class. But that was how I got into boys choir, because once again, a music teacher said, kind of held me after class one day and was like, vocalizing me. I was like, you should audition for the boys choir. Mm. I was like, okay, I'll see if I get in.
Look, arts education and like the teachers. Yeah. But it sounds like your family was supportive as well, because your sisters were engaging in arts as well.
Yes. Yeah.
What did you feel... isolated, maybe is the word I want to use, of being, well, I guess you were in that choir too, but I was gonna say, did you feel isolated as a man engaging in the arts there?
I didn't feel isolated as a boy.
Mm-hmm.
I felt isolated as a black boy, but I didn't feel isolated as a boy.
Go on. Yes.
Well, you know, I was in the Chattanooga Boys Choir for all those years. In the earlier years, there were multiple, other black kids in the choir with me. But as the years go on and we get older and, you know, maybe there's a stigma around the choir that I didn't realize until years and years into it.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this started to whittle itself down until all of a sudden when I'm in the traveling performing choir my first year and like I'm the only one left.
Wow.
And I remember once I got into sixth grade and went to middle school, there were other friends who I knew from the choir, and I quickly learned that I wasn't supposed to talk about the choir at school.
Really?
Yeah.
Because there was a stigma around it.
That I had no clue about. I was excited.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when they burst that bubble,
How
did that feel?
It felt weird because I didn't know why.
Okay.
I didn't know, why can't we talk about it? I'm excited about choir. So our first year, we're going to be traveling. That's awesome. Let's talk about that. Let's, be excited.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't talk about that.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So how did you reconcile that, emotionally, internally? Did you know you wanted to leave Chattanooga after that?
I always had this fantasy of living in California. This is from when I was 8, 9, 10. I think I always knew that Tennessee wasn't the end of it for me. Mm-hmm. Whether that's just from watching TV, and then once I did start traveling, I was like, oh, definitely not.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then so who were some of your inspirations and influences that you maybe saw on TV or heard in music?
Oh, goodness. Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Boys to Men.
Uh-huh.
I grew up, with all of that 90s R&B on the radio, all of that, the Brandy, the Monica, all of those people. And I had my parents' music as well, so there was lots of Jacksons. My dad had all these Michael Jackson actual vinyl.
Yeah.
Lots of that in the house. And all the Motown stuff that my parents would play, that was around as well.
Were your parents involved in performance at all? Performing arts?
My mother would direct all of the church plays.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always at rehearsal with her, after school and after, you know, my choir practices and things like that.
Yeah.
So I was always there. I was there so much I would know all everyone's lines.
Right, you were the unofficial standby.
I was the unofficial standby stage manager. You got your line wrong situation. I was that kid.
I love that though.
Oh,
I
God,
do.
I was that kid.
But look at you now, thriving in New York. it all paid off. And was Chattanooga segregated? I don't know anything about Tennessee.
Yeah,
it was. Okay.
Definitely. My mom's from there. My dad's from South Carolina, but my mom grew up there. That's where the family's from. And yeah, she can tell me stories about my grandmother, her mom, snatching her away from going to a water fountain and things
that. Wow.
Yeah.
Like real Southern segregation shit.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
And so was the boys' choir integrated?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember how old it is. I'm trying to remember if it existed back like pre-1960s and things.
Right.
I can't remember. Part of me wants to say it wasn't.
We can fact check later.
We can fact check later.
So there is, because there's like, I feel like that's a place that has history. Like it's heavy history.
Yeah, but I didn't feel it.
You didn't.
At that time, I did not. I didn't feel it. Yeah, I just felt like I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed what I was doing. Yeah, that's all I can really say about it.
When did theater get involved?
Theater came involved really in college. I did like a high school musical because I had seen, that was my senior year, that I'm gonna date myself. A certain musical film came out.
I love it.
A certain musical film came out before my senior year in college that highly highly influenced me, was my gateway drug. And I was like, maybe this theater thing, I'll try. I sing. Maybe I'll do this little school play. We did Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm. I was a derelict. I said, there you go. Downtown, you know, all that.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So that's the one play I did, but it didn't really catch on and like kind of get to me until college.
But you studied marketing.
I majored in marketing.
I want to hear about that.
Okay.
Because I think that's something that a lot of folks grapple with that love performing arts, but maybe actually major in something else.
Yes.
And I'm curious of what led you to marketing.
Basically my sister was doing it and I followed her into a lot of things. To be totally honest. And also I could see myself maybe, like, I liked the idea of developing advertisements and like getting into the psyche of customers and like all of that. I hated sales, so that didn't really go anywhere. But I really enjoyed like my marketing research classes. I was all about that.
Yeah.
And like promotion classes and like all of those things. But sales was not what I was going to do.
But see, I would argue that marketing and like acting, I mean, it's all about finding the truth, connecting, storytelling.
Yes. And it's also about knowing a product and how to present it best.
Look, yeah, if you want to get real about it, I agree.
Yeah.
So I mean I just feel like those two worlds are definitely aligned. Mm-hmm. Were you involved in theater at all while you were pursuing it, that degree?
Yeah. When I was in college, I took like an acting class, like I believe like the beginning of my sophomore year, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wound up doing one of the student productions the end of my sophomore year, and kind of from there got involved with like the main stage productions. I was a minor. I ended up getting a minor in theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when did it click that you wanted to pursue performance full time?
Like around junior year.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to change my major for a second, but at that point, like literally I was 3 years in.
Yeah.
I was so close, and it's just like there's no point. And I love my school. But a theater degree from that school isn't going to be the thing that opens doors for you.
Got you. Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, I was in the productions. I was taking the performance classes.
Right.
So, like,
getting that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was the catalyst for you to move to New York?
That, just knowing that Broadway happens here was one of those things. Knowing, like, taking a couple of trips up here and checking things out. Before my senior year, I went to had an internship at American Dance Festival in Durham, North Carolina, and had an amazing experience. And so many of those people either lived in New York or were going to school in New York or were like, we're going to be in New York. And I was like, oh, if these wonderful people are going to be there, you know, and I have like a community already here. Let's check it out. Let's see what it's about. So I took a couple trips. Stayed with my friends, saw shows, and like just kind of felt my way around. And also at the time I was trying to get into grad schools. That didn't work out. but I had looked at some grad schools while I was coming up and yeah.
What was your position at the American Dance Festival?
I was a school operations intern.
Okay.
Yes. Basically, I was in charge of running the staff of actual staff assistants who were like scholarship students, making sure that, you know, equipment was delivered to specific studios on time, who was in specific studios and all of that fun stuff.
And so you get to interact with a lot of the different folks with that festival.
A lot of the choreographers, a lot of the dancers, and yeah, lots of people.
So how, I mean, obviously it shaped you in wanting to motivate you to come to New York, but I mean, what did you leave that festival feeling, I guess?
I felt seen.
Okay.
Like as a whole person, like all of it.
Yeah.
For the first time, maybe ever.
Wow.
Like with everything.
Wow.
And I felt that that community of people, some of whom I'm still very close friends with today, kind of embraced all of me in a way that I hadn't felt maybe ever.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Those experiences are like so significant in terms of shaping our identity, who we are moving forward, all of that stuff. So did you feel scared at all? Or were you like, since I have these connections from the festival, I'm going to be okay in New York?
I felt I was going to be okay when I got here. It also, this was divine intervention thing as well. Right a year or so after I graduated college, I wound up working with a company that had a location in Jersey City.
Okay.
With like a staff of people doing the same job that I'm doing in New York, in Nashville, a same staff of people doing that same job in Jersey City. So I let them know, like, hey, I'm planning to move to New York anyway. If it's possible, can I work at this Jersey City location? Like, I'm planning to move there anyway. You don't have to pay for me to move, but like, I'm going to go.
Right, right.
So I can still work for you once I get here.
Yep.
Is that cool? And it was cool.
Wow. That is divine intervention, isn't it? Cosmic.
That was something that I couldn't have planned for.
Right.
But like, as I was working there and like, I kind of backed into that job anyway. There was another horrible job experience that I want to talk about before then that I wound up getting fired from.
Oh, no.
But it gave me the skills that I needed there to get the other job that helped me land in New York.
See, there you go. It all helps. We all build
it all,
upon.
It did.
You know. What was that first year like? I mean, the first year in New York's scary, don't you think?
It was different for me, I think, because I was working basically a corporate job.
Okay. Yeah.
I was here working a corporate job. So I had my 9-to-5. I was taking dance classes on weekends. I was taking acting classes in the evenings. I was seeing shows fairly regularly. And, you know, just trying to find my little community in the city.
Which is so essential.
Yeah.
How did you find the community?
I mean, bars, let's be honest.
Look. But that's, I mean, that's real.
That's where it started. Like, people may know Marie's Crisis, the piano bar downtown. There was that. There was the Duplex when they had an evening called Mostly Sondheim, which was an open mic weekly. And I would go there. I would sing. I would, you know, meet the people. And like, once again, some of those people still very close friends with.
I love that.
Some of those people I've worked with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm also curious too. The going to dance classes on the weekends, the acting classes in the evening on the weekdays, what would you say to yourself when you finish that 9-to-5 job and you're like, I'm tired. I just want to, I want to go to Marie's Crisis. I want to go home and eat and watch Netflix. How would you motivate yourself?
That, no, I wasn't tired because I was going to dance class. I was looking forward to dance class. I was looking forward to acting class.
Oh, y'all, he just, yeah, you just, yeah, yeah, yeah. You did it, yeah.
It was like, I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm here. I have access to this level of training. Let's do it. This is what I came here to do. So, like, that first year, like, oh, I'm too tired to, no.
It fueled you.
That first year, yeah.
That just got super real, and now I just feel lazy all the time, but yes.
Well, I mean, like...
But it is like, it's that level of dedication and like discipline of like, you want to do this, so you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Which is real. So yeah, yeah, that was just like a good wake up call for me. Amazing. Yeah. What was one of those, like, do you remember one of those classes that you took that first year that just like changed the game for you? So memorable.
Oh goodness. There was this, oh God, this wonderful teacher at Steps on Broadway named Richard Pierlin. And I used to take him pretty religiously, and like, because I saw the class and I saw the people who were in the class, I'm going to be like them. So I'm going to take that class. And the first few months or so I was in that class, probably was not hitting it. But I, you know, I stood in the back. I wasn't trying to be in the front. I was like trying to figure out the, you know, waiting my turn.
Right.
You know? But I remember there was this one time, this wonderful dancer who I knew was on Broadway, who was fantastic. We were doing a combination from Sweet Charity, and somehow I was in the group with her, and I found myself like interacting with her and dancing and like living and.
Oh.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, I love that.
And I was just like, okay. Yeah.
Or you just feel like present.
I felt present. I felt acknowledged. I felt like I could, you know, like for so long, dance had been about just getting steps, and I think that's probably because I was a gymnast for so long.
Oh.
And just like executing movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't been able to just kind of let go and perform and just let everything else happen. And I remember that very clearly happening in that class and like interacting with this person who I admired and, you know, whose career I was like in awe of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a special moment. Where were you a gymnast at?
Oh goodness, this was like when I was in high school.
Oh really? Okay.
I was just at a regular club in Chattanooga. I was obsessed with the Olympics, and so I was watching those religiously. And eventually, after, you know, putting it off for a long time, I was just like, I have to actually do it and give myself a chance. So for about 3 or 4 years, I was training as a gymnast like at least 3 days a week.
Wow. So you're disciplined. Look.
Yeah.
Which is necessary. So you said gymnastics was very much about like executing the moves.
Yes.
How else, or how do you think it informed your work as a dancer when you were dancing?
I think it informed my work in that I was very athletic with my movement. I still am. Like, in terms of what I do well, it's still the jumps.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it's still, like, things that involve a fair amount of range of motion and flexibility. Like, that's where I feel like I can shine.
Right.
You know, those are the skills that, you know, that carried over significantly from gymnastics to dance, at least for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The tumbling, not so much. There's some skills I can still do, but those were not my events. Floor exercise was not my event.
There you go. Do you remember your first professional audition once you got to New York?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I got dragged to it. I wasn't planning to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I came here, and it was on the same weekend as I know one of my friends was, and wasn't sure if she was moving or she was visiting, but there was this audition for this random production of Annie Get Your Gun. And it was at Theater Row Studios. And I was like, I don't even know Annie Get Your Gun. I don't know who I would be in Annie Get Your Gun. Why am I auditioning for Annie Get Your Gun?
Yeah.
But like, she was like, come with me. It's happening. Oh, let's get on this list and like, let's go. And I'm like, oh my God. So I went. I don't remember what I sang. I probably sang something wildly inappropriate. And you know, I left and I was like, I guess that's my first audition.
But see, don't you think it's good to just like rip off the band-aid, maybe? Yes. Even, you know?
Yeah.
And actually I was talking to someone the other day and they were like, you know, I think it was like one of their teachers recommended going to an audition they felt like they weren't right for to get out the audition jitters even. So maybe you were ahead of the curve.
Maybe I was. But maybe she was onto something.
So you know, a conversation that we've had a lot on the podcast too is like the audition room assumptions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a conversation to worth continuing to have, but I think until we get more casting directors of color, it's worth bringing up these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any stories of just, you know, it's can you sound more urban? Can you sound more black? And it's like, what? Are we, like, have you had any of those experiences while you've been auditioning for stuff?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to recall things that may be in that vein.
I mean, it's great if you haven't.
I don't think that I have, but I also, I mean, well, I mean, like, I never get, here's the thing.
Let us know.
When I was getting sent in for certain things in my first kind of representation situation, like, so often I was getting sent in for the drug dealer, the drug addict.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The drug addict who's on death row.
Mm.
And like all of this and all of this. And like, I don't read that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. I'm an actor. Yes, I can do it. Yes, I can put things in body energies. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm paid to do. Mm-hmm. That's what I can do. But you know, I would go to these rooms and I'd see these people. I'm like, this is who they are or not. Let me rephrase that. Not this is who they are. They more readily bring this energy or look into the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I do. And I was just like not understanding why I was in those rooms. And I never got asked to do more because I think, you know, as well as I was trying to, you know, embody those energies and give it, you know, they probably were able to find other people who more readily portrayed that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Cause like, you know, I understand that.
Yeah.
And so that's the only thing I can kind of say in that vein. I don't think they never really asked me to like do more of that, right? Because I don't know. But I didn't really want to do more of that either.
Yeah, no, of course. And no, I'm glad. I think it's good that you don't have a specific time where they ask you to be more black or whatever. Like, I'm hoping the amount or the volume of those stories, you know, continues to shrink. But I guess it's just an interesting, interesting is not the right word. It's just, it's something that I think continues to be brought up because it's like, we continue to just see a sliver of black stories represented in media.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So until we think outside of the scope of black people as drug dealers, drug addicts on death row. I was like, I love that specificity. Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like Christian Dante White, I think the first episode brought up like, when can we have a black next to normal? Or like, you know, when can we have these roles for black performers that just allow you to be a multi-dimensional person.
Human being, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and I mean, sorry, there's been a lot of talk too of like color conscious casting, you know, of mm-hmm. having like Jelani Aladdin's always my reference.
Yes.
Of like playing Kristoff.
Yes.
But too, I think it's, and that's great. No shade, because obviously I love Jelani and I love that he did that. But I think there's also room for like, not just like dropping one black person in a show, but like having a story.
Yes.
That's about the black experience. That's not like set in slavery.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. A contemporary original.
A contemporary original one might
story.
Say.
Yeah.
So anyway, mm-hmm. I'll get off my soapbox.
No worries. Yeah.
But so you are also creating your own work on YouTube.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Take the stairs and trust the process.
Yes.
Let's talk about it, because I think it is important for Black artists to be Black content creators too. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess they're one and the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What inspired them?
A couple of things. I was kind of, I just needed outlets.
Mm-hmm.
I needed outlets that I could control. I needed outlets that I could, you know, do something with right now.
Yep.
I feel like so often, maybe me specifically, I'm sure other people experience this as well, but I may have an idea or something that I want to do and like put out there into the world, but within seconds of formulating this idea, I go through the list of things that I don't have that would prevent me from accomplishing this goal or this idea,
mm-hmm.
or bringing it to fruition. And those, yes, those obstacles are legit. But I think with the vlogs,
mm-hmm.
that was something like, I have a phone.
Right.
I have, you know, in Marcus, it's like I have a friend.
Yeah.
You know, I can get a cute little backdrop.
Right.
I can start this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it started with being maybe advice, mm-hmm. to like what I would have wanted to know when I moved here. What would I have wanted to know? As a up and coming performer,
mm-hmm.
in the business, about living and performing in New York.
Right.
That's kind of what Take the Stairs was all about, you know, inspired by that. I mean, someone said it before, Jennifer Lewis, but you know, she kind of embodied like the elevator to success is broken. Take the stairs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and I mean, trust the process is more or less my time to kind of really check in with me and my journey and what's going on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, report things or maybe not report things and just say, this is what it is right now.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. No, I love it because I feel like it's a great example of like authenticity,
mm-hmm.
which we need more of on social media.
Yes.
You know? And vulnerability.
Yeah.
Is always key. What have been some of your favorite moments from those vlogs?
Oh, I mean, anytime Marcus and I get into a dream girls moment, that's just personal fun. that's just good for my soul.
Right.
But I don't know. I think this is an interesting question. What have been my favorite moments? I think once we started having guests on the program and having different perspectives, I loved hearing things, mm-hmm. or experiences from people who were my friends.
Yeah.
But I may not have known about this experience. I may not have known about their feelings on a certain situation, yeah. In the business.
Right.
And hearing those things has always been like something that excites me and like I think has been what I've liked the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Just learning more about the people that I think I know.
Right, you know? Right. And like peeling back a layer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been on tour with, mm-hmm. Hair,
mm-hmm.
the producers.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by the tour stories.
Okay.
Those are the layers I like to peel back, because it is so interesting to like, we do think of New York as the theater mainstay, but
yeah.
National tours are doing the work.
Absolutely.
Going out to the people.
Going to the people.
You know?
All the people.
Did you visit Tennessee on any of your tours?
No.
How dare they?
Not once.
How are you not going to give it back to the people of Chattanooga here?
Not once.
Where were some of the places that you traveled?
I mean, the most exciting was Japan. I mean,
oh, that's pretty
we were
cool.
in Tokyo for 2 weeks with Hair.
That's pretty cool.
That was amazing. But I mean, we were in, you know, parts of Canada. We've done the outskirts of LA, not LA, but like, what was that? in the vicinity.
Right.
You know,
right.
Not in LA. but like lots of time in Florida and just like all over the place, you know, like random places. Like Wyoming. I was never thought I'd be in freaking Wyoming. I've performed in Wyoming.
right. And what was it like to see like a cross section of the United States?
It's something that never. The bus got old, but looking out the bus and like wondering, like, what am I going to see today? I don't think it got old. Like, there are moments where I just like wake up and we're like driving along the side of this mountain on one side, the Pacific Ocean on the other. And I'm just like, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And like just driving through like at the actual Rocky Mountains and like seeing actual snow-capped peaks and things. I'm like, what? I'm from Tennessee. What is this?
Right. You know? No, truly. Do you feel like it had an impact on on your performances?
Maybe. I think, I don't know if on performances specifically, but on me, yes. So I'm sure that, you know, drifted its way into the on stage, but just seeing like what nature had created and like all of these wonderful things and how they made an impact on me, and like, can I make a fraction of that impact on stage? Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
Maybe.
No, I'm always curious because I feel like, you know, the experiences we have in real life that can inform performance is always fascinating to me.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know. I can't speak directly. I'm sure there's an indirect effect, but yeah.
It was quite the experience.
They were all quite the experience.
What was hair like specifically? Like, I'm always curious about that show. Because it's just such a specific like slice of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hair was a dream.
Yeah.
Hair, like, I came to New York when I came to New York partially so I could catch that original cast of Hair before they all went to London.
Oh,
So I got to see them, like, the day I moved to New York.
Wow.
And funnily enough, when I saw it, I was like, I think I could do that track. And, like, I didn't know what a track was then, but I saw this person. I was like, I think I could do that.
Right. And then sure enough.
That was my track.
Are you serious?
That was my track. Yeah. When I did the tour, you know, same costumes, same director, same set. Yeah.
So what was that moment like? You find out you have that part. You go to rehearsals the first day.
Yeah. I was on cloud nine because I felt like this was the beginning. This is what I came here to do. This was the beginning. This was the you know, get your foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, I'd worked for it. You know, I'd had like people supporting me, like my acting teachers at the time was like kind of preparing me for, you know, through the audition and getting ready for the show and like getting me in the brain space to like go where I needed to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, that show goes places.
It does.
Yeah.
What is, it doesn't have to be just one, but what is the artistic experience that you think has shaped you the most as a person, as an artist?
Oh. Hair in that. It's a piece of theater that changes people and opens people's eyes. And that never got old.
Okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
I did a production of Memphis that was a dream in terms of the people involved. And seeing the level of excellence around me, like even on day one, and like looking to the left, looking to the right, and seeing all of this excellence, and like, oh, I'm here too.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, if I'm here and they're here, it inspired me to like work towards that level as well, but also know that on some level I have that in me.
Right.
As well.
That you're included in this
yes.
group.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're a very disciplined person, which we've learned tonight. but and you stay motivated. But for those moments that as an actor and a lot of our listeners are, mm-hmm. When you don't, when you are feeling stuck and when you aren't feeling like you're enough,
yeah.
What do you do in those moments?
It's hard. It's never easy. If there's like a triggering event, maybe an audition or something that gets me to that place,
mm-hmm.
I will be honest. I'm not a pleasant person for the next hour.
Okay.
And I know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I get away from people for that next hour. yeah, I a lot of times have to have my hour to just, if I need to vent, I need to vent. If I need to say things, I need to say things. I need to write things down, I need to write things down.
Mm.
If I want a piece of chocolate, I'll get a piece of chocolate.
You deserve that piece of chocolate. decompress.
You know? Mm-hmm. And like I said, if it's something like there was a triggering event that got me to that place,
mm-hmm.
I will always have to eventually get to the point of asking, is there something that even in a very small way that I could have done to prepare more, or did I contribute to this in any way? And if so, I have to be brutally honest about that and say, you probably could have done X, Y, and Z. But in many cases, there isn't anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, that's just the business.
Hmm.
And so much of it is not in our control. It is in the control of the people behind the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to ask yourself, am I controlling the controllables?
Right.
And if you are and you've done everything and you know that you gave everything that you had available
mm-hmm.
to you, then as upsetting as it may be that you didn't get the role or didn't get the call back or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you have to know that you did it yourself.
Right.
And I feel like in those situations, those are the ones that I can generally get by and get through, some quicker than others. but yeah, if I know that I have gone in and done my best work, the result on their end has a lot to do with things that I can't control.
Right.
And once again, that's just the business.
It's just the business.
Yeah.
And you have therapeutic creative outlets like Trust the Process, for example.
Yeah.
You know, it yeah. takes stairs. But it is hard in those moments.
It is.
You know, but
definitely.
But I think being honest, like you were just very honest. Or how you can be honest with yourself in those moments, I think
yeah.
is essential too.
Yes. Yes. Know? And I think it's very important to take responsibility of your work
mm-hmm.
and doing that work. There are times when I like, this is even recently, where I was kind of in a situation where I was like, just kind of going down the list of things that I'm doing right now. I'm like, I feel like I'm dancing better than I've danced maybe ever. I feel like, you know, I have a connection to like my acting material, my audition pieces in the room. Do I need to maybe take a closer look at things vocally? Do I need to maybe make a change in like how I'm training vocally? And, some enlisting feedback from people that you trust.
Right, right.
From people that you trust.
that part.
Who are going to be loving, but maybe also tell you some things that may need to be addressed. And maybe point you in the direction of people who can address them.
The truth tellers.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's sometimes you need that and not everyone's going to offer that. So sometimes you will have to ask and it may be awkward. The answer that you get may be awkward. But in the end, it, once again, if that truth is told in love by someone that you trust, it's a little more easier to take. It's a little easier to take and it's easier to take action with that information because once again, it's someone that you trust and who you know is kind of wanting the best for you.
Right, right. And supporting you in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah. And because like once again, like I'm speaking specifically about me, with some, like some vocal things, let's just be real for a second. I had felt like I had kind of almost stagnated for a period of time, you know, with what I could do. I think I was doing well, but like it was kind of one thing. And I felt that there was more and I asked someone I trusted about it. I was given some feedback and, you know, started to seek some additional training from other people who could address certain things.
Yeah.
So, and I, and like, I've been really, I have seen the benefits since then and I'm, you know, looking forward to continuing with that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Stretch yourself.
Yeah. And like, that's something that also helps in moments where it's down or in between gigs or whatever, or successes or whatever, whatever that means. you know, knowing the work that you're putting in, maybe seeing results that only you can see that aren't, you know, there are certain results that, you know, aren't going to be get you 100 likes on Instagram.
Right.
You know, and there's some results that do, and that's wonderful. But a lot of the results in the work that you see, that's for you. And sometimes it's just for you to see and for you to appreciate and know that that's there. And somewhere along the line, it's gonna pay off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think you're great.
Thank you. I think you're great.
No, I mean, I just really, because it is such a, I feel like the industry and this job, you know, of being a performer, being a content creator, it's not easy. You're putting yourself out there constantly to get, not rejected, but like be on the fence of, are you going to get rejected? Or are you going to get accepted? Right?
Yeah.
Like this is the, I feel like this is one of the only jobs where you're constantly getting job interviews.
Constantly.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just admire all performers, but just to be able to be so grounded in yourself and in your truth is really like inspiring.
I try to be, I try to not, I try to take it all in stride and like not give in to the ups and the downs and like, because like every day can be this major roller coaster and like there are some people who can like get excited for every single audition. I'm not one of them. Like, I'm going to go in and do my work, but that's it. Whatever happens on the other side of that is what it is. And like I said earlier, sometimes those rejections or no's or close but not quite enough situations hurt more than others. But I can't go into everyone like, this is the one. This is it. Like, that's... Calm down. There's a little pressure there.
Release the pressure a little bit. Release the pressure a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just an opportunity to get in the room and do your work.
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking about it.
And maybe there's will be more from this particular project or maybe not.
Right.
So.
That no, that's a good way to think about auditions. I'm always like, I'm a Capricorn. This is a rejection. Goodbye.
Okay.
Let's talk about Miss Bible Belt.
Oh, her.
Inspiration. How did you get in? Like, tell me everything.
That was a production of Pageant that I did in Arizona at Arizona Broadway Theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a show I auditioned for. At the time, I very much wanted to do Kinky Boots. Mm-hmm. Still want to do Kinky Boots.
Producers, are you listening?
Since we're here, I'm putting it out there. but that show, you know, just came along and I was like, I think I can go in and do this. You know, I sang What's Love Got to Do with It as like a prudish, gospel-y woman who's like giving into her, you know,
ooh,
desires.
But
trying not to at the same time.
Yes.
I remember that audition. Did that and wound up almost missing the offer just because emails weren't coming through and they finally messaged me through my website. We're like, we want to give you this role. We can't get in touch with you.
Oh my goodness. Technology though.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so I wound up doing it and it was just an amazing experience. It was my first time up in drags. And it was an experience, like had to learn how to do the makeup and all of that stuff. And like, that was an experience where everyone who was involved before, who was involved in that show had done some sort of drag before. Some of them like actually had their characters. They do drag. And everyone else had like, you know, done it in a show or something. But I was just like, this is what I got makeup wise. Let's hope we can, you know,
right,
get this face together.
Right.
The first time I put it on, I was like, oh, it looked a little clowny. And I'm like, okay. Because someone did it for me and I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, we're going to make this our own from
right,
here.
Right.
And it's so interesting because I look at pictures and I try to only post the pictures from late in the run because the ones early in the run. She was harsh. There were some lines. And I know it's for the stage, but like there were some things that I'm like,
right,
we got her right by the end of the run.
Mm-hmm.
We got her right by the end of the run. She was looking good.
Were you nervous to perform in drag before you did it?
I was very excited.
You're very excited.
I was very excited.
Yes. You're like, Kinky Boots who?
Yeah. I was just, it was like, like I said, it was like something to kind of satiate that desire, which I don't know. I think during those years, it may have been a little unhealthy how much I was wanting to be in that show.
I see. What about that show resonated with you so much?
Wow. I mean, you have this beautiful, dark-skinned, black, gay character on stage. Who is a human being who like, and I think like Billy talks about this regarding that show. It kind of sucker punches you with Not My Father's Son because you get all of the glitz and the glam before that.
Mm-hmm.
You get Land of Lola and all this and you think it's going to be one thing. And then, you know, when Lola, you know, shows up to the, you know, to make the boots as Simon, gets insulted while he's in the men's clothes and, you know, has that breakdown in the bathroom and sings that song. Like, that's when it's like, oh, there's an actual human being here with an actual experience that resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that and all I wanted to do was just like do it. So that was something that, you know, at the time it was happening, maybe I wasn't ready for it. I don't know. But, you know, for whatever reason, that journey with that particular incarnation of the show didn't happen for me. It was something that I wanted, but it didn't happen. But it made me excited to see like what else you know, was in me as a performer, I think, like, working on that material from that show just to, you know, when I would go in for it, made me better.
Right.
You know, just right. working on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Kinky Boots is also so interesting, I guess is the word, because I feel like they provide multiple perspectives in it that allow audience members to connect.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But then it opens their eyes.
It does. It does.
So I feel like there's always gotta, I know it just closed or whatever, but I feel like that story will be continue to be told and told again because it's so like vital to, for conversations.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So sorry. Pivoting back to this Bible Belt,
back
we got
to
off
her.
Our key boots, but
back
so
to Ruth Ann.
To Ruth Ann. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like you changed during that production? What did you learn?
I felt very powerful coming off of that production.
Okay, yes.
I just felt like I could, like, that show made me feel like I could do so much, like I could hold my own in a way that it had never been asked of me before.
Right.
To have a 7-minute number on stage,
ooh,
just me.
Mm.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
And the music and the costume. Like,
listen.
7 minutes, you have to give it for this audience.
Yes.
Every single time.
I love that.
And it was, I learned a lot about the discipline that it takes to do that.
Mm-hmm.
How I work in that situation, like how I deal with nerves, how I deal with, you know, what's there today vocally and like, you know, when things aren't there, like shutting it down and like social life is like, no, I have to, you know, just
right.
do my job.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That, so that like, is discipline though.
Yeah. Like, I think like coming off of that show, I felt like I could do a lot more than I knew I could do before I went in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And empowered to like continue to push.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was one that like fueled me for a minute.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Those experiences are so powerful and I feel like they continue to feed us as we move on in the world.
Yeah.
So if folks want to follow you as you continue on your journey, where can they do so?
I am on the Instagram.
Yes.
At JamesRoberts96.
And where can they find the vlogs?
They can find those on YouTube. JamesRoberts4 is the username. If you search Take the Stairs, you'll probably find it. If you search Trust the Process, you'll probably find it. Or like any of those with James Roberts in the title or in the search bar, you'll definitely find it.
Very fun.
Yeah,
yeah, y'all got to get hip to it. So as you know, love to end the podcast on two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we came prepared.
Yes. Yes, it is.
He's like, I'm ready. If you could recommend a piece of black art, whether that be a book or a film or an album, what would it be?
I have been very much into, I know this is not a new album, but Janelle Monáe, Dirty Computer.
I mean.
I listened to it and liked it when it came out last year, but something about it, when I'm listening to it right now, I haven't stopped listening to it for like 2 months. I've listened to it probably at least twice a week for the past 2 months.
Wow.
And like, in terms of like going against the grain and not having to conform to whatever standards you feel are imposed on you and like giving yourself the strength to stand in that.
Yes.
It has been something that has given me that sort of fire to do that right now.
Yeah. Janelle Monáe, listen, like,
yeah,
she's the best. That's always a good recommendation. And then if you could give a shout out to a fellow black artist, who would it be?
I mean,
and if you want to do a top three or a top five.
I mean Billy Porter does not need my shout out, but I'm going to shout him out just because of influence and like
give him some love.
Three ways. I mean, three quarters of the way to EGOT.
I know. Can yeah, you believe?
That's huge. That's huge.
It's huge
for
indeed.
An out black gay man, an out unapologetically black gay man.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
That's something that I don't know that I thought I'd see,
mm-hmm.
but I'm so glad I'm seeing it. And I do want to shout out my friend, Miss Danielle Fulton.
Yes. Gosh,
she hates when I gush on her, but I'm going to gush on her.
Do it.
Because I don't, people aren't ready for the Danielle Fulton experience. They're just not.
Y'all buckle the hell up. James is letting you know.
She's amazing in everything.
Shout out to Danielle. Yes. It was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It was a pleasure to be here.
I'm so yeah. glad we got to talk.
Me too.
And just, I think it's always an important reminder to like, to be truly and loudly ourselves.
Yeah.
And stay grounded in that truth, which yeah. you've done. You've been a good reminder for me, and I hope for the listeners too. Yes. Until next time, y'all.